Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, Third Canto, Chapter 9, Text 43. No, 44. Maitreya Vacha,
Maitreya Vacha,
Tasma,
Tasma,
Evam,
Evam,
Jagat,
Jagat,
Shastre,
Shastre,
Pratana,
Purusheshvaraha,
Yajyedam
Svena
Rupena
Kanja
Nabhas
Tirodhade
Maitreya Vacha
Tasmaevam
Jagat Shastre Pradhana Purusheshvaraha Yajyedam
Svena Rupena
Kanjana Pastirodhate
Maitreya
Vacha
Tasmaevam
Jagat Shastre
Pradhana
Purusheshvaraha
Yajyedam
Svena Rupena
Kanjana
Bhastirodhate
Maitreya
Uvacha
Tasmaevam
Jagat Shastre Pradhana Purusheshvaraha
Yajyedam
Svena Rupena
Kanjana
Pastirodhate
Maitreya Vacha
Tasmaevam
Jagat Shastre
Tasmaevam Jagat Shastre Oh, someone else.
Maitreya
Vacha.
Tasmaevam
Jagat Shastre. Pradhana Purusheshvaraha. Yajyedam Svena Rupena. Kanjana Bhastirodhate
Maitreya
Vacha Tasmaevam Jagat Shastre Pratana Purusheshvaraha Yajyedam Svena Rupena Kanjana Pastirodhate Maitreya Vacha Tasmaevam Jagat Shastre Pradhana Purusheshvaraha Yajyedam Svena Rupena Kanjana Pastirodhate Maitreya Vacha Tasmaevam Jagat Shastre Pratana Purusheshvaraha Yajyedam Svena Rupena Kanjana Bhastirodhate Maitreya Uvacha.
Maitreya Uvacha.
The sage Maitreya said.
The sage Maitreya said.
Tasmai.
Tasmai.
Unto him.
Unto him.
Evam.
Evam.
Thus.
Thus.
Jagat Srastre.
Jagat Srastre.
Unto the creator of the universe.
Unto the creator of the universe.
Pratana,
Pratana,
Purusha,
Purusha,
Isharaha,
Isharaha,
the personality of Godhead,
the personality of Godhead,
the primeval Lord,
Lord.
Yajna,
Yajna,
Idam,
Idam,
after instructing this,
after instructing this,
Svena,
Svena,
in his person,
in his person,
Rupena, by the form.
Kanjanabha,
the personality of Godhead, Narayan, Tirodate,
disappeared.
The sage Maitreya said, after instructing Brahma, the creator of the universe, to expand, the primeval Lord, the personality of Godhead, in his personal form as Narayan, disappeared. Purport. Before his activity in creating the universe, Brahma saw the Lord. That is the explanation of the Chatushloki Bhagavatam. When the creation awaited Brahma's activity, Brahma saw the Lord, and therefore the Lord existed in his personal form before the creation. His eternal form is not created by the attempt of Brahma, as imagined by less intelligent men. The personality of Godhead appeared as he is before Brahma and disappeared from him in the same form, which is not materially tinged. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports of the third canto, ninth chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Brahma's Prayers for Creative Energy. Om Kyamati Mirandhasya Jananjana Shalakaya Chakshun Militam Dina Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Vistam Sthapitam Jina Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kada Mahyam Tathati Shapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Jata Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raganatam Vitamstam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhan Vitamstra Hey Krishna Karuna Sindho Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kamshana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha kopitarubhyascha kapa sindhobhyayavacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namah. Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vashadi Gaur Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Maitreya Vacha. Tasma evam jagat shastre pradhana purusheshvara yajyedam svena rupena kanjanabhas tirodhate. Prabhupada's main point is that the personality of Godhead couldn't have been a manifestation of the material creation because the material creation wasn't manifest yet. The Mayavadis have this idea that the impersonal Brahma is the
absolute, the highest reality, and that the personality of Godhead is a manifestation of the material energy. But here, Brahma didn't create until after he saw the personality of Godhead. That means the personality of Godhead was first and the creation was second. Elsewhere, Srila Prabhupada quotes, Sa Aikshatai, Sa Srikshatai. He glanced over material energy and the creation was initiated. Aikshata means seeing from Aksha. Aksha means eyes. So the Lord saw the material energy. He impregnates material energy just by his glance. But he glanced over the material energy. That means his eyes were already existing. So his eyes couldn't have been a product of Maya because Maya wasn't activated until after he glanced at it. So his eyes were there before. That means his whole form was there before the cosmic manifestation got rolling. Maya jyakshena prakriti suyate satyaratra. The hetunanena kontaya jagat viparivartate. Material nature is working under the supervision of the Lord. So the same from so many quotations, from so many angles. The Lord is primary, the material creation is secondary. So the Mayavadi theory can't hold that the Lord is a product of the material energy. Material energy was there, but material energy was inert. Material energy wasn't doing anything. That's called pratan. Pratan has, material nature has two features. They're described in the third canto. Pratan and prakriti. Pratan is the material nature as the supplier of material elements. Something like a warehouse or a storehouse. Everything is there. But nothing happens until material nature is activated. The activated form of material nature is called prakriti. So what activates the material nature? It's the Lord's glance. Here, tasma evam jagat shastre. The Lord is speaking to the creator of the universe, but the secondary creator. Atrasarga, visargascha. There are different topics in Srimad Bhagavatam. The first is sarga, and the second is visarga. Sarga means the creation of the material elements, and visarga means the secondary creation. The primary creation is by the personality of Godhead, and the secondary creation is by Brahma. So the primary creator is speaking to the secondary creator. Secondary creator didn't know what to do. Primary creator had no such difficulty. He knew exactly what he was doing. He could do it in his sleep. The Lord could create the entire set of universes in his sleep. And he does. But Brahma, even when he's awake, he doesn't know what to do. Until he's instructed by the personality of God. He finds himself on the lotus in the dark and is wondering, because he's philosophical, who am I and what am I doing here? And what am I supposed to do? Now, these topics were in his mind, but he didn't know the answers until after he underwent tapasya and was actually instructed by the Lord, then performed tapasya, then received further instructions. The Lord didn't have to undergo any tapasya. Natasya karyam karnam chavidyate. He doesn't have to do anything. He just creates. But Brahma had to undergo tapasya, he had to receive instructions, then he could create the universe as it was before. The Lord is mentioned here as Pradhana Purusha Ishvara, the Ishvara controller of Pradhan and Purusha. The cosmic manifestation consists of these two things, the material energy, Pradhan, and Purusha, the enjoyer of the material energy. The enjoyer of the material energy is the living entity. He's also the sufferer. He's trying to enjoy. Purusha prakriti stohi bhunkte prakriti jan guna karanam guna sangasya sadasad yoni janisha. Purusha, the so-called enjoyer, is situated in the material nature, prakriti stohi. And bhunkte, he's enjoying. What is he enjoying? Prakriti jan gunan, the qualities that are produced from goodness, passion, and ignorance. Prakriti jan. Sometimes he's enjoying music in the mode of goodness, sometimes music in the mode of passion, sometimes music in the mode of ignorance. Sometimes he's enjoying seeing something in the mode of goodness, sometimes passion, sometimes ignorance, sometimes tasting in these three modes. Everything, trying to enjoy in different ways the products of material nature. Karanam gunasanga asya. And in this way, he becomes associated. Gunasanga. He becomes associated with these gunas. Why do we become associated? Because we want to enjoy in a certain way. We want to enjoy a certain kind of entertainment, so we go to the movie and we become associated with the people in the movie house, with the popcorn, with the whole thing. We want to enjoy another kind of pleasure, so we go to the bar. We want to enjoy another kind of pleasure, we go to the opera. We want to enjoy this way, that way. Different kinds of restaurants, different kinds of everything. We want to enjoy. And therefore we become associated with the opera crowd, with the rock crowd, with this crowd, with that crowd. Or we want to enjoy, man wants to enjoy with the woman, so they become associated. There was no association, but because they wanted to enjoy, hi, what's your name? They become associated. The material living being has no association with material nature. Asanga hiyam purusha. The living entity has nothing to do with material nature. But he imagines that he has something to do with material nature. Why does he imagine? Because he wants to enjoy. He creates a picture of how he's going to enjoy and then goes for it. Manogata, the desires are born from the mind. Elsewhere it's said, sankalpa prabhavan kamans chakvan sarva anasheshita. The sankalpa prabhava, the material enjoyment or the idea of material enjoyment is born out of mental concoction. Sankalpa means mental concoction. We're imagining that we're going to enjoy in the material world. We're imagining that we're going to enjoy this way, that way, the other way, spending money for enjoyment, doing this for enjoyment, doing that for enjoyment. Imagine. Actually, there's no... The whole thing is imagination. I'm imagining that I'm this body, that I'm American, that I'm white or black, that I'm a man, that I'm a woman, that I'm young or old, that I'm this, I'm that. It's all sankalpa, imagination. And I'm imagining, this will be enjoyable, that will be enjoyable, this will be enjoyable, that will be enjoyable. It's all sankalpa prabhava, imagined. And what is the result of this imagination? One becomes associated with that imaginary object of enjoyment. material energy in its different forms. And Sadasad Yoni Janushu. As a result, he takes birth in higher and lower species of life, good and bad. They're all bad, but good and bad species. Sadasad Yoni Janushu. He has nothing to do with material energy, but he's taking birth again and again in different species of life with this idea, let me enjoy, let me enjoy. And that combination of the material energy and the living entity is making the whole world go. What is that in Bhagavad Gita? Yayedam tarayate jagat. What is that? Apareyam hitasvanyam prakriti vidhime param jiva bhuta mahabaha yayedam tarayate jagat. The living entity is trying to exploit the material energy. And in this way, he's keeping the material energy going. The prison house is going because of the prisoners. The material nature is going because of the conditioned souls. So the whole world is the combination of these two energies of Krishna, the inferior nature, pradhan or prakriti or material nature, and the superior energy, the living entity. Etad yonini bhutani sarvaniti upadhare aham krishnasya jagata prabhava pralayastata. Everything comes from these two energies, higher and lower. And these two energies come from Krishna. Therefore, Krishna says, I'm the source of the creation and destruction of everything. So the pradhan, the purusha, both controlled by Krishna. And therefore he's the controller of it. Pradhan Purusha Ishara. Vyajya Idam Svena Rupena Kanjanabha. Kanjanabha is the personality of Godhead whose navel is like a lotus. And he instructed Brahma in this way, Vyajya Idam. And svena rupena tirodate. He disappeared. The Gandharvas also have this capability. They can appear and disappear at their will. They get that capability from Krishna. Everyone has some talent, some capability. So that comes originally from the personality of Godhead. So the Lord appears just like that. And he can disappear. We can't do that. We're not endowed with that capability. We have to walk out of the room or exit in some other way. But the Gandharvas and ultimately the personality of Godhead, they can just appear and disappear just like that. So the Lord disappeared svena rupena by his own form. The form was not imposed by the material nature. It was his own transcendental form, Tunun Swam, the Lord's own spiritual. Form. So Brahma was not instructed by anything formless. And he was fortunate that the Lord, it wasn't just as in some accounts that there's a voice speaking, or in Brahma's earlier experience that he heard a sound. But now, after his tapasya, the Lord has appeared to him personally. The Brahma was able to see the personality of Godhead face to face. And now, after having completed what he wanted to do, having instructed Lord Brahma, the Lord has disappeared to go to him. Any questions? Comments?
That shloka That I'm the source of all material and spiritual worlds. How can there be a source of something that's eternal?
Yeah. What is the difficulty? The source and emanation relationship is there. Even though, just like Prabhupada gives the mundane example of the sun. The sunshine is always coming from the sun. It's not that first there was the sun, and then there was the sunshine. Day one, sun. Day two, sunshine. They're coexisting. But the sun is always the source, and the sunshine is always the emanation.
Mm-hmm. Eternity is one of those fun things. One of the things that really I really liked in my first thing was that the spiritual world is infinite. And the material world is one quarter of infinity.
Yes, one quarter of infinity. The physicists can try and work that out. We don't have the skill.
So the same thing with eternity. How can something come from something if it's eternal? Same
yeah,
thing.
Eternity comes from... from Krishna. In the first edition of Bhagavad Gita, by the way, half the translation for that verse is missing.
Which verse?
Somebody pick up a copy.
The old one or the new one?
The old one?
Yeah.
Seventh chapter.
7:3
Something like that. 7:6 Of all that is material and all that is spiritual in this world, know for certain that I am both its origin and dissolution. That's Aham Krishnasya Jagata Prabhava Pralayastata. That's of everything that exists. I'm the origin and dissolution. But etad yonini bhutani sarvaniti upadharya. Everything has its birth in these two natures, superior and inferior. There's an argument being given here by Krishna. There's this and there's this. Everything comes from these two things, from the inferior energy and the spiritual energy. And those two energies come from me, and therefore I'm the source of everything. It's a three-step progression. It all comes from Pradhan and the living entity, from the Apara Prakriti and the Para Prakriti. Everything comes from those two Prakritis. Those two Prakritis come from me, therefore I'm the source of everything. So that's complete in the second edition. Small thing. But there are a lot of small things. It's okay. Any other questions, comments, complaints?
I think Krishna says the same thing in the 15th chapter, the fallible and infallible and unknown. None of the same.
Yeah. Kshara Patito. No. Let's find it. Either version. Kshara Akshara Evacha. Kshara Sarvani Bhutani. Bhuta Stokshara Uchitai. 15th chapter. But that's not the verse. That's one of the nearby verses. Let's find that one. Let's see. Yeah. Dva vimo. Similar. Dva vimo purushao loke kshadastrakshara evata kshadasarvani bhutani kutastokshu. There are two kinds of living beings, fallible and infallible. And uttama purushastranya. Then there's another purusha. We heard about the purusha, the living entity. There's two kinds of living entities, fallible and infallible. The fallible ones are in the material world. The infallible ones are in the spiritual world. Uttama Purushas tu Anya. But there's another Purusha. Paramatneti, the Paramatma. Yo Loka Triamavisha Vibharta Vyayishra, who's maintaining all the three worlds. So the Mayavadi theory is that the now we're the fallible living entities, but by perfection of yoga, perfection of meditation, we can become infallible. And when we're infallible, we're God. Because God is achuta, infallible. So when I become infallible, I become God. But Krishna says, no, there's another Purusha, another infallible living entity. Uttama, beyond this material existence, there's another Purusha. Paramatma. There's Atma and there's Paramatma. So because, and then Krishna says, because I'm transcendental, yasmat kshadam atitoham aksharad apichoto, because I'm beyond both the fallible and the infallible, atosmi loke vede che pratita purusha. I'm celebrated both in the Vedas and in the world as the Supreme Personality of God, purushottam, the ultimate transcendental person. Something else. Yeah.
Well, here I guess Lord Vishnu is instructing Lord Rama.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering, see, the other day somebody called me on the phone to talk to me about something. And mm-hmm. Incidentally, they asked me a different question.
Mm-hmm.
And I gave an answer, but I told him I don't know. Now. The thing is sometimes people run into a personality, and that personality gives them an instruction.
Mm.
And his quandary was that he kind of has somewhat of a relationship with someone. He gets instructions from them, and this, that, and the other. But lately, he got an instruction that he didn't agree with, and he didn't think it was right, and he wasn't going to follow it. So he asked me, he said, in this instance, does this mean I'm going to go to hell for not doing the, following this instruction, this greater personality, and all this? And I said, no, I think the worst thing that will happen is that you won't get the benefit from following that instruction.
Hmm.
But I'm wondering, how does that work? You have the greatly respected personalities. They give you an instruction. On one hand, they say to disobey the orders of the spiritual master is somewhat of an offense.
Yeah, therefore you have to decide whether you're going to accept that person as your spiritual master.
Yeah.
Till then, he has his opinion, and we respect that this is the opinion of a senior person, respected person. But other people have other opinions. I may accept his opinion. I may accept someone else's opinion. I also have my opinion. Therefore, Prabhupada mentions that Krishna and Arjuna were having friendly talks. And Krishna says, you should fight. You're nonsense. And Arjuna says, no, I'm not going to fight. I can't fight. So the talk is going on between two friends. And then, because Arjuna says, I can't resolve this, he surrenders to Krishna. I accept you as my spiritual master.
Yeah.
Now you please instruct me. Then the friendly talks end. It's not, well, you know, you have your opinion, I have my opinion. Krishna, you think this, but I think that. Then it's submissive here. Krishna, I don't understand. You said this, then you said that. But please clarify it for me. But he says, I completely accept whatever you've said. And when we accept the spiritual master, it means we accept that he knows, I don't know. And therefore, I'm going to take his direction. Then, to disobey the order of the spiritual master is an offense.
So I guess that's where it might would get to a point where it would be such a big choice. Let's say you did accept someone. I guess maybe it wasn't a formal thing, and maybe you didn't declare it, but you did accept someone, and then all of a sudden you are confronted with an instruction that seems to be completely wrong. At that point, I guess it would be within that person to decide.
Then you have to see.
This whole thing, or am I going? You're rejecting, I guess, at that point. You're rejecting that authority, I suppose. And that's a big deal.
Yeah, then you're making it qualified. that I sometimes accept, I sometimes don't accept. Then you're not going to get the same, the relationship is not going to be the same.
Yeah.
Then it's, I sometimes accept, and then I don't know, is it that I accept him when I like it and I don't accept it? You know, when he says, chant Hare Krishna and dance and take prasadam, I accept. And when he says, no illicit sex, I don't accept because it doesn't seem right to me.
Yeah.
It's too repressive. Okay. Am I going by my own intelligence? That concern is there. Or on the other hand, is it that I'm trying to understand the absolute truth and I'm not sure whether I can get, whether I can fully surrender here or not. So one is allowed to consider. One is allowed to consider, can I fully surrender here? If he fully surrenders, then now it's a contract. Till then, it's his own discretion is still coming into play as an active feature, whether I like to do it or I don't like to do it, whether I agree or I don't agree.
During our conversation, he also brought up this idea, well, you signed the contract, and you're in that contractual agreement, but then let's say the person actually does tell you to do something that is wrong. Are you covered? I mean, is that still the right thing?
No, it's right.
It's still right to do the wrong thing if you're doing that thing that you are surrendered to that person.
You don't know what is right and wrong. Okay. It has to be grievous.
Yeah.
It has to be grievous. Even the spiritual master tells you to do something wrong. Still, it's right.
Unless it's completely, it has to be.
It has to be very grievous. Nyaya rahitam. Karya, karya, manjanata. When the spiritual master loses all discretion, doesn't know what you should do and what you shouldn't do, becomes involved in illicit activities, gives up the association, rejects the association of the Vaishnavas, or becomes a critic of the Vaishnavas, then parityago vidhiyate. Then one should give him up. The spiritual master is condoning here. Here, take LSD. It's good for your spiritual life. That means he's lost all discretion. Here, go bet on the horses. It'll make you feel better. No. When he loses shastra rahita, when he gives up the direction of the shastra rahita, then, he's to be rejected. Just like Bali Maharaj. Rejected. Shukracharya, you're telling me not to surrender? First of all, I've given my word, you're telling me not to follow my word? I've promised a Brahmin and you're telling me to break my promise? And now you're telling me he's Vishnu, so don't give him anything? If he's Vishnu, I should give him everything. So that means reject it. So then he became Mahajan. But it's not that everyone who rejects his Guru Maharaj becomes Mahajan.
Yeah.
It has to be very... therefore, it's extraordinary. Why is this history there of Bali Maharaj and Shukra? It's extraordinary. It's not ordinarily expected that a cultured gentleman will give up his spiritual master, disobey his spiritual master. So it's just like it's not expected that you're going to kill your grandfather, kill your teacher, kill your cousins, kill your brothers. It's extreme. And that's why it's presented. It's so extreme that it becomes the centerpiece of the book, this great conflict. And similarly, giving up the spiritual master that way, it's extreme. That's not what you do. We don't normally kill our grandfather. We don't normally give up our Guru Maharaj. But an extreme circumstances. Krishna is telling you to do. Or he's told me not to surrender to Krishna. No, I reject it. It's not a casual thing that, Guru told me to do this, so I said, pack it in. No. Yes.
Could there be a difference in the
I know a lot about film. The spiritual master says, use this kind of film for that situation. I know that that kind of film will not work in that kind of situation, because I know all the, you know, physics of this and that kind of film. So a way to resolve that would be to tell, like in Bengal, when someone doesn't, they disagree with your calculations. They say, I don't understand. Yeah. And it's explained to them again and again until the person who actually made the miscalculation understands
gets it.
what it was, and then say, yes, it's like that.
Yeah, sometimes it's like that, that the spiritual master gives an instruction about material things, and we think he really doesn't know quite what he's talking about. On the spiritual platform, he knows what's what. On the material platform, I know what's what. You can get in trouble that way. That's how the devotees got cheated by that Mr. Payne at 22nd Avenue, who's going to buy them a grand building. All they had to do is give this down payment. And Prabhupada said, don't do it. And the thinking was exactly what you said, that, well, he knows about spiritual things, but Mr. Payne knows about material things. So we'll listen to Swamiji for this, for going back to Godhead, and we'll listen to Mr. Payne for getting the building. And that's how they got cheated. So the famous story is there of Krishnadas, who was sent to mail a letter. Prabhupada, not a letter, I think, it's either probably a cassette. You probably used to send these dictations by taking an envelope that somebody had sent him, a letter, turning it inside out, addressing it, stapling it, or like that, and send it. So either something like that or another letter. So Prabhupada gave it to Krishnadas and said, send it. He said, well, Swamiji, I don't think it's, you know, sealed very well. And Prabhupada said, it's all right, you can send it. So Krishnadas goes off with the letter and he's looking at it and he says, comes back. Swamiji, I don't think it's... Prabhupada says, no, it's all right, you can... And the third time, then he comes back the third time, and Prabhupada, as this report goes, banged on his desk and said, you should know that everything I say is perfect. So even on the material platform, in our material affairs, the word of the spiritual master is respected. Ultimately, our material life is our spiritual life. Also, we're not supposed to have a separate material life. Of course, it's expected that the spiritual master will know what is what and not will know what is what. We saw that. We went to Prabhupada for guidance on, you know, the Umbrella Corporation was another one. Someone wanted to create a legal structure by which everything would come under one umbrella. And the biggest lawyer, top-notch lawyers in New York were advising, yes, this is what you do. And Prabhupada, and they spent a lot of money, you know, getting the whole thing together, getting the whole plan together, and Prabhupada scrapped the whole thing and said, no, this is wrong. And the devotee involved was like shocked, and, you know, his faith was rocking and so on, because this lawyer had said something and Prabhupada had said something else. And of course, over the years, we've seen that umbrella corporations for ISKCON are just invitations to total disaster. But so Prabhupada knew what he was doing. Yes?
Well, a lot of devotees, several devotees, when Prabhupada said the things he did in the fifth canto about the moon and the universe and so forth. Couldn't
handle what Prabhupada said about the fifth canto, that we never went to the moon. Of course, when did we not go to the moon?
69.
And that was, you know, those of us who grew up in the 1960s, we remember the race for space and conquering the moon and all of that. And how it all happened, boom, 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 boom. Within a few years, they just budgeted all this money because we had to beat the Russians and we went to the moon. And now it's 2008, 40 years later, And we're not building microchips on the moon as we thought in the great with the great advantages of the weightless atmosphere. We're not sending tourists back and forth. We're not exploring all the unknown features of the moon and what possible resources could be there. We haven't established, the United States of America hasn't yet protected the world and made it safe by democracy by establishing military bases on the moon. None of this has come to pass, although the moon by now is kind of like, it's an easy shot because we're sending probes to Mars and Venus. And still, you know, what happened to the moon? So it's a very interesting point that Srila Prabhupada considered it bogus, and history seems to be supporting his argument more and more every year that goes by. From another angle, it will be interesting to see there's going to be a over the years as ISKCON matures, we're going to see inevitably, whether we like it or not, people trying to define to what extent Srila Prabhupada's words are infallible and to what extent their reflection of his, for lack of a better way to express it, his worldly persona, to what extent is it a reflection of his being Bengali, educated at the turn of the century by professors from Britain and so on. To what extent is what he says coming from there, and to what extent coming from the parampara? Can we take some of it and accept it and take other things and say, well, that was coming from Professor Urquhart or whatever it was? And it will be, we'll be watching border disputes, should we call them? People will be wanting to draw those lines in different places. Already people are drawing the lines in different places. The things that Prabhupada said about women are not really true. That's just coming from the attitudes of that particular time in Bengal. And then other people say, no, it's absolutely true, and it's Prabhupada knew exactly what he was talking about. As an example of one place where people are drawing different boundaries. It will be interesting to watch it. Anyway, it will be interesting to watch it.
If we're around.
If we're around. I will be around. We're already around, and it's already happening. Perhaps we'll be glad that we're not around for wherever it goes in the future. There's a tendency to compromise on these things. We're seeing it in regard to gays, because now to be gay is kind of just to be like same as being Chinese or something. It's just another way that people are born. And so there's an active project to relativize and minimize anything negative that Srila Prabhupada might have said regarding homosexual activity. So it's another, you know, can we shift the boundaries here? And then we know that there are places where Srila Prabhupada said something and it wasn't exactly what he meant. Prabhupada, to give an example, in the fifth canto example, that he gave some purport about the blood reaching up to a particular planet. Hari Sari pointed out that it didn't tally with the Bhagavatam's description. Prabhupada looked at it and said, yeah. And said, I was just so enthusiastic to punch these scientists out. And he said, no, that it could be changed, that one. Hari Sari could tell you the story exactly, but it's a story he remembered quite vividly that he pointed out to Prabhupada, and well, that couldn't work that way. And Prabhupada admitted, yes, it doesn't work. I was just so enthusiastic to smash the scientists.
Where does this tendency come from? Or always question?
Where does the tendency come from? Well, it comes from it comes from a tension between what we perceive to be right and what the spiritual master is saying.
Does it boil down to faith?
Does it boil down to faith? It sometimes may boil down to faith. It sometimes may boil down to discretion. Prabhupada said this, but did he know that in the future this would happen? Does it still apply under this time, place, and circumstance? I have faith that what he said was right at the time he said it to the person he said it to. Is it a universal instruction? Was it a joke? Did he mean it? Was he just, you know, poking fun at somebody, or was it a grave instruction? I'm in difficulty because it doesn't seem that this instruction applies under these circumstances. It doesn't seem to fit what he would want. Now, is it me or is it the instruction? It's not necessarily that I'm a faithless demon. It's that I'm trying to understand what he actually wanted or would want. Well, take Prabhupada. His spiritual master said 64 rounds. Now, Prabhupada said 16 rounds. Is it because he was faithless? It's because there was a different circumstance and he had to apply the essence of the instruction. So you get this tension between the essence of the instruction and the formal statement. Not that they're always in tension, but there can arise an apparent tension between what he said and what he wanted. And then you have to try to reconcile them. And this happens in every spiritual movement, in every political movement, in every social movement, that the founder says something, then he leaves, and then new circumstances come up or things change. And one side says, if we abandon his instructions, we're lost. We're going to be, you know, forever in 1801, you know, trying to relate to the people of 2060 in 1801. And then the other side says, the one side says, you have to adapt, you have to take the essence of it and make it fit the present circumstance so that you accomplish his mission, his objective. And then the other side says, well, as soon as we start whittling away at his instructions, as soon as we start bending, and as soon as we start curving, and as soon as we start picking and choosing, we're finished. Because what our capital is just the instructions he gave us. And as soon as we start interpreting and da-da-da-da-da, we're lost. Now, these two sides will always be there. And there'll always be a tension between them. And I'm not going to say, you know, I'm not going to be the judge of who's right, who's wrong on any different circumstance. It's just an observation that we're going to see this. And we're already seeing it. There are those who will say, you know, pick an instruction. Any instruction. You'll see those who say, well, that was then and this is now. And there'll be those who'll say, that's forever. And you can't change it one iota. And it's not that the right side is always right, the left side is always wrong, or vice versa. There's this tension between what he meant and what he said. Not always. Sometimes what he meant and what he said are absolutely identical and there's no question about it. But when you get to something that's questionable, something that's where it doesn't seem to fit, where couldn't we change it? Couldn't we adapt it? Couldn't we understand it this way? You know, he didn't really mean rape like rape. He meant rape like carry away. Could we understand it that way? And there are those who say, yeah, that's what Prabhupada intended. And there are those like me who said, no, he knew what rape meant. He meant rape like rape. And, you know, am I right and they're wrong? Well, I think I'm right, of course. I always think I'm right. But they think they're right. Now, Hare Krishna. So, and it tends to be very simple for both sides. you know, that obviously we have to adapt to carry out his instructions. And obviously we have to just stick to the instructions as they are. You know, and if you don't get it, whichever other side you're on, then you just don't get it. That's your problem. Yeah.
Well, you can see that, like for that example you gave with the rape book, that you can see how people could reinterpret that in different ways.
Mm.
I mean, that's obviously going to happen.
Yeah.
But the real rub seems to come in when somebody wants to push their agenda so far that now we have to remove that from Prabhupada's book, or we have to change it according to my understanding of what Prabhupada meant.
Mm-hmm. There's, it becomes interesting because one side will say that, you know, as the BBT argued really, that, you know, we can't do this. We can't just start monkeying around with everything and trying to explain it in such a way. And the other side will say, with some reason, that, you know, where people are picking up the book and as soon as they see this, they're gone. And they can't become Krishna conscious. And don't we want them to become Krishna conscious? Well, it's not that they have an agenda, you know, an evil agenda. Their agenda is that we want to spread Krishna consciousness. There's so many contemporary women who are just going to be turned off as soon as they see this, 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 or this. Or even men who are brought up in the contemporary culture, they're going to look at this and shut the book. And losing the opportunity for spiritual life. That's not an evil agenda. I think it's a wrong approach to say, well, okay, then let's adjust the book. But it's not necessarily that they have they want to drive home, you know, they want a different something. They're sincerely taking it at face value that they're not some warped kind of people, which some of them may be. But taking it that they're sincere devotees and that they're really trying to serve Prabhupada and that it really pains their heart to see people not taking to Krishna consciousness, then we have to say, well, their motives are not bad, but then is their conclusion good? That's, and you know, DBT had its take on it. No, it's not good. But we can understand, it's not that our conclusion was, no, it's not good and you people are demons. Or even suggesting it, we just think it's not a wise approach to things. But not that people are necessarily ill-motivated, although they may be. It's not that there's no such thing as bad motives. That's also there sometimes. Dear speaker, please end the class at 8:15. That's for general speakers.
And then you give time for questions after.
Oh, I see. Okay, right.
So you're on schedule.
I'm on schedule. Any other comments or questions?
I was talking with Mukundadat a few years ago on some of these issues about how, you know, both sides seem right and they both seem wrong also.
Mm-hmm.
Because if this guy's right, this guy must be wrong. But anyway, he was saying, yeah, they're both right and they're both wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And what can you expect from an institution whose our philosophy is a chintya veda veda type?
That's a nice way to reconcile almost anything.
Simultaneously, inconceivably, both right and both wrong.
Yeah, that a chintya veda veda gets a lot of extended use. But
that's our cop out phrase.
It can be, but. But Prabhupada also said the same thing, that somehow we have to create unity and diversity. That some of us will want to say, you know, it should only be like this, and some should say it should only be like that. Both sides have their reasons, and somehow or other we have to try to move forward in unity with diversity. It's which doesn't mean a blank check for, you know, anything goes. Well, unity and diversity, you know, wife swapping is just kind of how it is in Sweden, you know, and it's like, if you want Krishna consciousness to spread there, you just have to kind of, like, adjust. Well, that's, you know, you can create unity and diversity, you can have a lot of diversity that way, and just say, well, we accommodate everything. But that's not how we go. then you're totally gone. Yeah.
Isn't there also some things that may take maybe about 30 years for us to realize, too? Because even though there could be instructions, things probably sit in the book, but if maybe that particular time, we haven't realized that in
that's there years, also.
And it's like, oh, yeah, this is right, but we didn't know it at that time.
That's there
so
also.
Things like in the era of infant care, that the Prabhupada said it was completely unheard of 30 years ago, and now it's like completely accepted.
Yeah. That's the other side of it. Sometimes it takes us 30 years, or sometimes we get it and the rest of the world doesn't, and we're like, the odd man out. And then, as you say, 30 years later, the world catches up to Prabhupada on some material point. So that's always a big danger. We're going to adjust it, and by the time we're finishing adjusting so that it fits with what they believe in 1980, now it's 1990, and people are starting to believe what Prabhupada used to say before we changed it. So, yeah, you don't really want to sell out that way. It is, as you mentioned, an issue of faith. Do I have faith that what the spiritual master is saying is based on fact, on deep understanding, on spiritual truth? So there's so much of it where we're just in conflict with most of the world. And our explanation of it is that they've got it wrong, that's all. They do not understand it. That Prabhupada understands it better than they do. And there's so many examples. I mean, you read Srimad Bhagavatam, and as you say, things that we just kind of either didn't understand or understood in the routine sort of way, now they get, like headline status when you read them 30 or 40 years later. They make so much sense. There's one that I came upon. I used it for a presentation where Prabhupada was saying in the first canto that the demoniac men try to create war in a peaceful population, and they have no other interest than their own self-aggrandizement. And therefore, Mother Earth feels overburdened. You read it, and you say, yeah, I guess that's right. But you read it in context of current events, and you say, wow. The power of that statement to act as an interpretive lens for seeing what's going on in the world is just terrific. It's like you want to get up and clap your hands and cheer over the way Prabhupada has just shot the arrow right into the center of the target, while other people are talking about this and this and this. Prabhupada's just boom, going right to the center of the thing. So it's there's so much there in Srimad Bhagavatam that people are going to sooner or later appreciate, or that we're sooner or later going to appreciate. Yeah.
I'm trying to formulate this into a question, so I'm going to ramble on for a while.
Oh, okay. We're warned.
Oh. So we're saying Prabhupada is absolute, clairvoyant, all perfect.
I didn't say clairvoyant.
Okay. But it's implied that, he's saying these things that are going to come true or going to be understood.
Yeah, clairvoyance it usually implies a sort of mystical capability, the ability to see the future by a mystical sort of a process. Srila Prabhupada usually avoided claiming such powers.
Mm-hmm.
He would just say, I'm just repeating what Krishna said. Krishna knows past, present, and future. And sometimes we may say, well, Prabhupada knew what the future was going to be. We don't want to sell him short either. But I would probably I would be a little hesitant to say, well, Prabhupada was clairvoyant and he read minds, although devotees also tell of instances where it seemed that Prabhupada exactly knew their mind. So it's an interesting area that may be beyond our ability. You know, I'm not clairvoyant, at least, or I'm not telepathic, so I can't say.
I'm still getting to the question.
Yeah, and I'm rambling. Go ahead.
So as his disciples, we accept whatever he says as absolute and perfect.
Mm.
And I guess where I'm going with this is, all right, so out of all of the billions of humans, we choose him as the one guy that knows what's going on.
Mm.
Everyone else, except for his guru, is like just kind of whistling in the dark and not really sure or clear.
No, I don't think that's required. Just like now, someone's accepting someone as his guru. It doesn't mean that he's thinking, well, the other gurus are whistling in the dark.
Mm-hmm. But their opinions are secondary.
For me.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean that because I've accepted you as my guru, I think everybody else is kind of like, just doesn't quite make it. It means that my faith is there. It doesn't mean that because you have, someone else has faith in the second guru, he's kind of, you know, made the wrong choice. It's kind of too bad. But, no, he'll get something, but he kind of chose the second-rate goods. That's a neophyte mentality. And we, you know, we accepted Prabhupada as extraordinary because he was extraordinary. I mean, among his, what you call his peers, he was eminently super empowered. What Prabhupada, the capability that was given to Srila Prabhupada to spread Krishna consciousness all over the world just wasn't seen elsewhere. The discretion to know how to adjust Krishna consciousness to make it work all over the world just wasn't seen elsewhere. So many qualifications that we saw in Srila Prabhupada just weren't seen elsewhere. But it would be unbecoming of us to say, well, all of his godbrothers were just whistling in the dark. Prabhupada could say that. He'd be like, oh, my godbrothers are just whistling in the dark. But for us to say that would be unbecoming.
There's two other parts to the question. I'm trying to remember how they all fit together.
Okay.
Okay, so we see him as extraordinary, and let's see, I guess the point I was getting at was why we would see that out of everyone, he is the exclusive one that we take shelter of. Of course, for us, it's because he's the only one that we knew of.
Yeah, it made life easy. There was just only one, and there was no choosing. It was Krishna, Prabhupada, or Maya.
Yeah. Let's see, also to impose our... But you kind of addressed that already. We have this exclusive devotion to Prabhupada and exclusive devotion to what, you know, his instructions, and for us to impose that on others
is contrary to Vaishnava culture.
Yeah.
Among the associates of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we never find that. That, you know, well, I got this guru, but you got that guru. Well, sorry for you. If he's not a Vaishnava, that's another thing. A Vaishnava guru nasyat.
I mean, not just amongst Gaudiya devotees, I mean like, you know, the rest of the world going up to professors and saying, well, you know, you just don't have it. Cause
well, that's a different thing.
You're reading the wrong books.
That Krishna says, you're namam duskritana mudha prapadyante naradama maya pratigyana surapanamashita. Sorry, but those are the credentials of your professor. You know, it's not, the Prabhupada says, it's not my saying, that's what Krishna says. So we're not all accommodating that everybody's a good Joe, and so, you know, I just happen to follow this teacher, but you're following Professor such and such who says that, you know, this is all a sort of an anthropological process by which Krishna became God, but there's no real, and, you know, his opinion is as good as Prabhupada. No, we're not all accommodating. But within the among the devotees of the Lord, there's a different standard. Jai Bhaje Sheva, Apakta Hinchar. Kaviraj Goswami says, those who are worshiping the Lord, they're great. And the Apakta Hinchar, and the non devotees, they're wretched, miserable. So we do make that. We're not, we make distinctions. Shall we end? One other thing, quick, is that from Sweden, the North European BBT, they produced these DVD-ROMs, actually for the Sankirtan Marathon. They have, it's all video clips, on the street Sankirtan in different cities of the world, some inspirational talks from Vaisheshika Prabhu and Gopal Krishna Maharaj and others, some clips of Srila Prabhupada also, and an extended section of clips concerning the editing of Prabhupada's books. So they're freebies. Anybody who'd like a copy can... Excuse me?
You remember you gave the DVD to Selma Kabul and he never downloaded it to our computers.
Okay. It's a computer DVD, so it won't play in your VCR. Okay. Thank you all.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.